All right, I'm going to go ahead and get started. Can everyone hear me okay? Okay. Thanks for coming out Friday morning. I know I'm Kurt Scheer, Program Manager for Microsoft. I'll be talking about services in VMM and how they're useful, MDC B203. This is a 200-level talk. I won't get too far into the technical details. I'll be giving a general overview, how to build service templates, how to deploy them, the life cycle, and that sort of thing. So I won't be going too far into the technical details, but there will be some practical applications. Okay, so the objectives to take away from this session, first of all, is to understand the model of services as it pertains to VMM and how we use it to accomplish the general goals, and learn how to deploy these services and then manage the updates to these services. A little bit of a problem with my clicker here. Okay, so we're going to be talking about services. First, I'm going to go through the justification of a service, essentially what it is, why you would want to use it, how it pertains to VMM, the components that are involved in a service so that you can build up the template and deploy it, the implementation, the actual creation of the service template, the actual deployment of the service, and then the life cycle when you have to manage updates and that sort of thing to the service. So one thing I want to kind of get out of the way first is the difference between the VM templates and the service templates. How many here have seen VM templates before and deployed them? Yeah, it's a very common thing. It's your starting point for your VMs. You kind of specify your hardware, how your guest OS profile will be set, your disk, the same kind of situation you would if you were deploying the VM to Hyper-V from the Hyper-V console. You're specifying just a single VM, and it's we refer to it as this fire and forget method. You've spin up the virtual machine, everything's done, you've got a virtual machine. Now, any further things that you need to do to the virtual machine, you're then going to connect to it, bring up the console, whether that's RDP or through the console, and make your configurations there. Now, compared to that, the service template model, this is your starting point for your services. You build up your service template and you deploy your service with it. And a service, essentially, the template defines the multi-machine distributed application. So we're not just talking about taking one VM and duplicating the VM. We're actually talking about possibly having different types of VMs and duplicating them independently. So you're specifying multiple machines, multiple tiers. A tier is essentially a homogeneous set of VMs. And it's kind of this source of truth. So you have your service template, and it's locked once you deploy it. And the understanding from VMM is that you're not going to change the service out of band. So the service template is going to be kind of your master template, as it were, to control your service. So the justification for services, why you should use a service, essentially. So you've got this idea of composition. So if your application is distributed across multiple VMs, and you've got these VM templates, or even if you have a single VM template, it's this idea of taking that VM and wrapping it inside something that's repeatedly deployable, and you have some kind of a grouping together. And then your logical grouping of your application, whether it be, you know, maybe it has an IIS server and a SQL server and a back-end data application, and you need to kind of pull all these components together and wrap them into one single entity. And that's essentially what a service is. And you've got granular scaling. So if say you're going to need more instances of your IIS server because you're getting a little bit of heavy traffic, you can scale out just the number of VMs on your IIS tier and leave the rest of your service alone. And conversely, of course, you can then scale back down when you need to. And then you've got this idea of redistribution. You've got your application. It's working in your development environment. Now you want to deploy it to your real-time place. So for your production, you can just export that template, import it into your template environment, and deploy it, knowing that it's going to successfully do all the configuration and take out the human error element. So now I'm going to jump into the components of a service and how to essentially had to go through those. So you've got your machine tiers. As I said before, this is your homogeneous collection of VMs. Each of your VMs in a tier is identical. They all come from the same VM template, and it's as if you were to repeatedly deploy the same VM template and get a lot of VMs, and they're all sort of grouped together into this single tier. You can scale up the tier, you can scale down the tier. And then you've got application hosts. An application host is essentially very much like a VM tier, except it doesn't need a VM. So if you've got some kind of technology like WebDeploy, like SQL DAC packs, their data application framework, or Server App V, these can be packaged into an application host and then deployed to the environment where machines might already exist. And I'll be going through a demo of that later. And then you've got tier settings. That's essentially where you say perhaps your tier can have start with 4 VMs and scale up to a maximum of 8 and scale down to a maximum of 3, something like that. Maybe you don't want your VMs to end up on the same host if you're deploying multiple VMs in a tier. These kind of settings apply to the tier settings. And then you've got service settings. You can think of these as variables for your service. If you need to set something that you don't currently know, and it can be, maybe it changes from deployment to deployment, you're going to create a service setting to encapsulate this data and say, okay, maybe my network I don't know right now, or maybe you're in an environment where you're going to deploy the same service to multiple tenants, and each tenant has their own network, then you could set your network as a service setting so that at deployment time you can just select which network you're deploying to. So it gives you a little bit of flexibility in the template model. All right, and the building blocks to create these templates. You've got your profiles, your hardware profile. That's very much your RAM, your disks, your process, number of logical processors, NUMA settings, things like that are going to go in your hardware profile. And then you've got a guest OS profile. That's going to be anything that's you can think of as post-sysprep configurations, things like machine name, things like joining the domain, things like enabling roles and services, all that sort of thing is going to happen in the guest OS profile. That's where you're going to configure all of that information. And then you've got your application profile. An application profile is where you post-OS configuration supply additional things, whether those be generic scripts that need to run to do some kind of configuration, or whether those are your web frameworks or your SQL DAC packs, that sort of thing. Your SQL Server profile is this, it's an entity that can complete a sysprepped installation of SQL. So if you've gone through the sysprep installation of SQL, they have their own way to do that, not outside of the Windows sysprep. Then this profile, you can configure all of the components that you would if you were to then boot up the machine and choose to complete a prepared installation of SQL. So that's what that is there. And all of these will go into a VM template, which most of you seems like you've seen before. And this VM template is then what you're going to drop into the service tier. And these service tiers are what make up your service template. So I'm going to go ahead and just jump through a tour of the building blocks here. I'm not sure if that's the resolution there might be a little strange. Is that legible? A little bit? see if I can bring up a magnifier there. This is a little awkward through an RDP connection, but let me close that. All right, so we've got on the left here, see if I can bring up another one here. All right, so you guys can't see it. It's on my monitor. So here we've got your different profiles. And I've gone through these here. There's the SQL Server profile, your hardware profile, your guest OS profile, your application profile. Now these other profiles here, this compatibility profile is where you define your compatibility for clouds. This is essentially where you're going to define the types of hosts that your cloud can use. And these three here are already predefined, and I think for most deployments, those three predefined instances generally work. And then you've got your physical computer profiles, which don't have anything to do with service templates. Those are the entities you create to deploy to do bare metal deployments and to do the new file servers and things like that. So in the other one I was talking about, so here is the hardware profile. And what you're going to get here is you're going to name something here, you know, demo hardware profile. And then your hardware profile is going to have all of your settings. You set your, we'll say, 4 logical processors. We'll set our memory. And then here you can define different types of devices that you might want to add and any kind of network connectivity you need. So I'm going to set this here to static, and I'm going to enable MAC spoofing. So this is a fairly straightforward, I'm sure most of you have seen that sort of thing before. You end up here with your demo hardware profile that I've created. And then the next thing is the guest OS profile, and this is very much the same wizard-driven experience. Demo guest profile. Now, the assumption here on VMM's part is that if you're using a Windows image, the Windows image is going to have been already sys-prepped to do any of this kind of OS configuration. So I can choose the distribution I'm running on, and then I can name this computer something. All of this kind of configuration that's the post-configuration. Here's the roles and features configuration here. So, for instance, the roles and features here, if I want to make this IIS, here's configuration for the application server, and this is the same, these are the same set of choices that you would get if you were doing the configure roles and features from within Server Manager. And you can just kind of check whatever you need there. Features, maybe I need... network load balancing here. And here's where you've got a configuration where you can name your domain and specify the credentials for joining the domain. So now we get a guest OS profile we've created, and then the last thing is the application profile. Creating the application profile is also pretty straightforward. So you've got your types of application profiles here, like I mentioned before. A general application profile is going to contain your scripts and things that you need to run post-configuration. And then you've also got SQL application host, which can be deployed to an existing SQL server using the data application framework, or a web application host to deploy to an existing web server using the web deploy framework. If you were to choose general here, you can then define your application here, add additional scripts that are then going to have your executable program and your parameters to that program. And I'll go through more on that shortly. So for now, I'll just call this. demo application profile. And then there is created there. Now, as I said before, these VM templates, when you create a VM template, all of those profile objects I created, those aren't necessarily required for a VM template. It's just something you can do. For instance, if you want to have a preset definition for a small, medium, large kind of hardware profile, you might define three different profile objects so that when you're creating a VM template, you can then easily just choose the profile object. And I'll show you how that looks. So here, I choose the Windows image that I want. And then demo VM template. Next. Now here, when I get to configure hardware, you see I could go through all the same stuff I just did before. Alternatively, I could just choose the demo hardware profile I just created. Now what this is going to do at this point is copy the settings from the profile object into the VM template. It's important to realize that it is a copy of the settings. It's not a reference to the existing profile object. So if you were to go back and change that profile object, the changes would not propagate through to the VM template. And then when I click Next, I can choose the OS configuration. And there, I'll just choose my demo guest OS profile I just created. And then onward to application configuration, in which I can just choose the demo application profile I created. The SQL Server configuration, I didn't actually create one of those. But essentially, the wizard looks like this. And you would create a new deployment. And as I said, this is the completion portion of the SQL sysprep installation. And then, so that's going to create a VM template object there, demo VM template object. And let me go ahead and we'll now switch back. There we go. All right. And on to the implementation of services. Now that you've seen the VM template I just created, a lot of you have done that sort of thing before. Now the process for creating a service template, of course, is the first step is to determine your requirements. And your requirements, as it is the machine requirements, that's your hardware configuration, your application configuration, all of these sort of things that I was speaking of before, you're going to probably want to know that sort of configuration detail prior to jumping in to create the service template. That's not to say you can't just create the service template, find out, and then go back and make the changes. But it is easier if you already predetermine the requirements. And then preparing the resources, I'll show you what the resources look like in the library in just a moment. And then you build the templates, you add your scripts, your different resources to the templates, you test and validate. One of the easiest things to do is probably deploy the service template without the scripts, run the scripts manually, verify you've got everything right, and then use those scripts in your service template. And then just move forward and deploy the service template. So for service template creation, this is a fairly straightforward process here. All right. So here we've got our service templates. Now, I've already created some, but I'm going to create a new one. And here, maybe I can just select. You can either select blank here and just drag and drop your VM templates onto the designer, or you can select something like this. This is a single machine here, and it's just going to give you just an empty tier that you could just kind of configure right there rather than using a VM template if you didn't want to. So I'll call this demo service. And then here you see it has a template, it has a tier here that it created for me. This is essentially a VM template. And it just created an empty one for me with all the default settings. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take our demo VM template, and I'm just going to drag and drop onto this tier, and it's going to copy the settings there. And you notice the our network connection that we had defined in our VM template is now connected. And this is just sort of a visual representation of a service to make it a little easier to see what this template is going to look like. Yeah, this is complaining about one of the settings I put into the MAC addresses, because I don't, this machine, this VMM server is not configured completely to do some of the things that I told the VM template to do. So it's just giving me a warning there. This is a bare minimum VMM server, so there's a lot of things that don't exist in it. I'm just going to do something like that. Now we've got this sort of thing, and you see we've got the one tier here. Now the tier settings down here, these are the tier settings I was talking about, enabling this to scale and then supplying your default number of VMs for this tier that get deployed, the maximum, the minimum, that sort of thing. An upgrade domain is a division of your tier into serviceable parts. So if I define this to have four VMs and I defined two upgrade domains, then whenever VMM is doing servicing, it would only take down half of the tier at a time. So it would shut down two of the VMs, make the changes, bring them back up, and then shut down the other two. So that if you have some kind of an application running that can handle that sort of thing, it won't fail and it can stay up while you're doing the servicing. And these upgrade domains can be, you know, if you've got four VMs, you can define four upgrade domains if that's the kind of thing you need. And then this checkbox down here, the availability set, is a way to define anti-affinity for a tier so that VMs on the same tier can prefer not to get deployed to the same host. So the other thing is, the other thing to consider is application order, application deployment order, and servicing order. Those are, you know, that's pretty straightforward. It's just the idea that if I were to drop another tier in here, say you had a SQL tier and an IIS tier, what's going to need to happen is, say the SQL tier needs to come up first. Then you could come down here, its deployment order would be 1, you select the other tier, set its deployment order to 2, and all of the VMs in this first tier must come up before the second tier is deployed. And that's mostly it for the machine tier settings. And that's, so this is what your service template kind of ends up looking like, just your visual representation of your service. Go ahead and save the changes. And now we've got our demo service that we've created. All right, I'm going to jump back here. Actually, one more thing I want to show. The question of network load balancers comes up sometimes. So I've got a web demo here, and what I'm going to do, and this is actually a service that I've deployed, and if we go to the VM and services, we'll see it deployed here, web demo. And here it is deployed. There's my server running. And what I want to do is I'm going to create a similar template, but I'm going to use a Microsoft Network Load Balancer. So in order to do that, the first thing I'm going to do is create a VIP template. And this is something that just needs to be created. So say this template is for, say, HTTPS traffic. And your virtual IP port then is going to be 443. I'm going to choose a specific manufacturer. It's going to be Microsoft Network Load Balancer. Now, this manufacturer here, you notice Microsoft is the only one listed. But if you had another, if one of our partners were to, if you had a device from one of our partners, you could install their DLLs on the VMM server, and then they would show up in this as well, so that you could have a different external load balancer. You'd set your protocol settings here. Only need TCP as HTTPS traffic. You can enable persistence, say source IP for a single host. And obviously that's just going to keep that persistent once a connection is made to one of the machines behind the load balancer. Connections from the same source IP address will go to the same machine behind the load balancer. So now I've got my VIP templates here. And I'm going to jump back. Kind of awkward with this screen magnifier here. Sorry about that. I'm going to jump back to the library where I was working before, and I'm going to, as I said before, the service template gets locked on deployment. So since this has been deployed prior, I can't actually make changes to the service template as it is now. I'll get into servicing in a moment, but what I'm going to do for now is make a copy of this. And then I'm going to open the designer again. And looking at the designer, you see it's a fairly simple configuration. I've essentially just defined most of the minimum things. The OS configuration has some roles defined. And if I mouse over them, it kind of lists the... I just checked a bunch of boxes under the HTTP settings, essentially. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to add load balancer here. And you get this sort of this visual representation again where you're going to want to make the connections. And this is, you know, you might be able to just kind of look at this and see kind of what's going on here. But you've got your back end and your front end for the load balancer. And you just want to connect your back end to your NIC and your connect your front end to your VM network. And so to do that, I'm just going to get a connector, and I'm just going to make these connections like you would in Visio or something like that. And so now I've got this all linked up, and now this load balancer can be configured if I were to deploy this template again. We don't have time for me to go through an actual full deployment. I'm going to go ahead and save that. But that's how you would set up a load balancer if you were using it for, say, your IIS tier or something like that. I'm just going to do a little bit of cleanup here and get rid of these two templates. And I'm going to jump back over here. All right. So other considerations while you're building these templates, your resource preparation, I'll go through that shortly, all of your scripts, whether you need your web deploy packages and things like that, those are going to be, you're going to have to prepare those sorts of things and get them into your library. And your generalization, your service settings, if you need components to be generalized in some way, you'll need to look into putting service settings in those locations. And so to do that, I'm going to jump to a kind of a generalizing talk here. And we'll get... What I'm going to do here is my blog demo that I have. Now, this is an undeployed service template. But I'm going to show you what it looks like. This was defined using an application host profile. So you notice it looks a little different. Because what this is rather than having a VM that it's going to deploy to, it's going to deploy to the web deploy framework for an already existing IIS server. So what I'm going to do here is make a few changes here. You notice in my environment I have this demoweb01.contoso.com. And if I'm going to hand this off to someone else to deploy this template, I'm going to need to change this. So to make a service setting, what you need to do is just kind of put an @ and then the name of the variable, web server, for instance, and then another @. And everything between these @, this now becomes a service setting. So now at deployment time, when I attempt to deploy this, this service setting will need to contain a value. So then you'll see here, there's the web server, and if I bring up the properties for this service template, there's a section here called service settings. And you notice now I have this service setting named web server. It doesn't have a lot to it, but if you bring up the properties, you can define whether this setting must contain a value and if this value needs to be encrypted for something like a password or something like that. So I'm going to uncheck that. But the value I'm going to put in is actually going to be the same, demoweb01.contoso.com. I think I hit the wrong key there. demoweb01.contoso.com. And you can put in a short description here. Name of web server. So now you see this it has a value here. And when I go to deploy this, it's got the same value it did before, but I could change the value at deployment time. So that I was just setting the default value there. And then you see some other settings here, the run as account that needs to do the web deploy package. If you're familiar with the web deploy framework, these sorts of things will be familiar to you. The type of authentication and that sort of thing will be configured on your IIS server with web deploy. So I'm going to make that change there. And I'm going to close this. I'm going to talk about importing and exporting real quick before we deploy that demo. And all right. So sharing templates is another thing that I mentioned. To export the template, it's essentially going into that same service designer, choosing export, saving the files. Any resources that are with the files, like that in that web demo, I had a web deploy package, and there's a resource associated with the service template. I can also export those resources at the same time. And then when I hand that zip file off to someone, they can then take those, the imported template will essentially just be an XML file that has all the template configuration along with a folder containing all the resources that I exported. So I'm just going to show what that looks like. So I've got the blog demo here. I'm going to go ahead and export this. And it says templates to export. This is the one I had here. Now, there's a hyperlink here for physical resources. By default, there's no physical resources exported. But if you click this, it'll bring up the list of physical resources. Now, in this case, the only resource I have is the web deploy package, which is a zip file. So I can choose to export that. And if I had, if this was a full VM, there would be the VHD files and any scripts that need to run and all that sort of thing would be considered resources. So they'd all fall under these categories here. And you can export as little or as much as you want. And if there's already a template there at that directory, you might want to check this box to just overwrite those. If not, it'll just tell you that there's already a template there. And sensitive service sensitive service settings, things like the OS product key and things like that, those sorts of things by default won't be exported. So if you check this box, they will export that information. And then if you are checking that box, you might want to consider checking the next box, which is encrypt the service template settings, and that will require a password when you import it. So for location, I'm just going to be simple here and put it on my desktop. And of course, just like anything else in VMM, there's the view script button, and you can see essentially the script that you need to run to do this sort of thing if you want to do it from the command line. And when I click OK, it's going to copy all the resources, export the template as an XML file, and save everything onto my desktop. So now that that's been done, I'm going to go ahead and delete this to simulate not having it in my environment. So now there's no blog demo there, and I'm going to move into importing templates. So when I go to import a template, I have to specify the path. Choosing the path here, you can see on my desktop is those two that I just... There's two things. One is the XML file, and if you go in here, the blog demo, it's not showing it, but the zip file that contained my blog is there. So I'll go back to my desktop. And if you just leave these in the default layout, when I select this blog demo and open it, I have the checkbox here, import sensitive template settings. If it required a password, it would prompt me for a password, but I didn't choose to make one. And then here, you notice that I already have this in my library. So it actually chooses something for me. Now, see, these are automatically kind of mapped by default. So I'm going to, if I edit this, I can actually choose a different one, or if maybe it didn't pick it up for whatever reason and it's in my library, I could choose it here. But there's also this button here, upload the resource in the template package. And this will allow the system to take the resource that was included with the template that I exported and import that. Now, I'm not going to do that because I already have it in my library. But I'm going to set that and then go next. And if I had elected to copy the resources, they would then be copied into the library. But now all this is going to do is essentially take that XML file, import its template, and make all the proper links to the objects in the library that I specified. And so now when we bring this back up, we'll see that it's got all the things we had before. And then if we look at the properties again and look at the service settings, you'll see in the service settings there's that same web server and it's got that same default value that I already specified before. So I'm going to save this for now and go back to all right. The next thing to talk about is the service lifecycle. Okay, so the service lifecycle management, when we look at it from end to end, what happens is first you create the template. I've gone through that and shown you what that looks like. And the next thing that happens is customizing deployment. When you actually go to deploy, a deployment object is created. The deployment object then... It hasn't been essentially attached to any of the resources in your environment. So it's just kind of this staging status where your template has been converted to a deployment but hasn't actually been deployed. And at this point, you're going to specify any service settings, select any hosts that you want. If you just set to automatically run the placement, then it'll choose the hosts for you based on the things that are in the service template. For instance, if it needs a certain network, it's only going to be able to deploy to hosts in that network. If it needs a static IP address, it's going to need to be deployed to a network that has a static IP pool defined, and then the host that it's deploying to has to link to that network. And all those sorts of things are figured out when you run placement automatically. And then the next thing is the deployment. Once you have everything ready, you just kind of click the deploy button, and it goes out and starts pushing this template, just like you had before with the VM templates. When you hit deploy, it starts creating the machine. Now it starts creating the service. So the next thing there is the service instance itself. Now you've got either these VMs running or the applications on your VMs if you're using something like WebDeploy or SQL's Data Application Framework. And they're going to be existing out there on your network, and then you can kind of monitor their status there as one entity. Now, if you need to make changes to it, say you need to make changes changes that require rebooting, like changing memory or you know various things, adding a disk or something like that, various changes will take place. What you're going to do is essentially update the template. I'll show you the process you have to go through. You update the template to a new version, and then you apply the new version of the template, and then once you apply the new version of the template, it's going to go out there and make all your configuration changes in the service instance and update it to be linked to that new template that you've done. So the deployment process, this will be on the slide if you want to go through it later. I'm just kind of go through this pretty quick. Basically, for each service, it selects the tier based on deployment order that I talked about before, and then it creates the VM from the VM template that's in the tier. For each host, it's going to create that VM. There might be multiple VMs. If you've got, say, 4 VMs in a tier, it's going to be deploying those to the host in parallel. Then it's going to power on the VM and wait for the VM to kind of complete all its all of its sysprep configurations. It's going to install the VMM guest agent into the VM, and then do any kind of pre-install configuration. There are script hooks that you define when you want to run which script. So the pre-install scripts will be run at this point. And then application pre-install scripts run after that. If there's an application being installed, it's going to install the application. And those are applications like your server app V and things like that. And then post-application install scripts will run. And then post-install scripts will run. And then if you have a load balancer at that point, the VM will be added to the load balancer, and then you're done. So for deploying, I'm just going to show you a quick demo of what it looks like to deploy this template that we've already created here. So we've got this here. And you see there's a configure deployment button. So I'm going to click this, and now I'm going to name it something like my blog. Okay, now I'm in the, this is sort of the canvas for deploying a service. As I said before, when it prepares a deployed instance, but prior to the actual deployment, that's what step we're in here. And you'll see down here, this is where your service settings can get populated if you wanted to change this in any way. That's where they'll end up down there. And you'll see this is the description of the service that I gave it. Now, for this instance, we won't see any hosts that it's getting deployed to, because with a web application framework, you're supplying the web server name manually. But ordinarily, what you would see is placement running, and it'll show the hosts that have the approved ratings, very similar to the way you would deploy a VM template. So what I'm going to do here is deploy service. And before I do that, I want to show, this is the console here. This is the console of the demo web 01, contoso.com. And you'll see here the default website doesn't have anything under it, essentially. It doesn't have any applications that are running on it. So I'm going to switch back here and click deploy. And it's starting the deployment task now. Now, if I jump over here and go to jobs, you see that completed pretty quickly because it's a fairly small package. But if we come back here, we'll see the blog pops up here. Now I've got a new application. So I'm going to bring up Internet Explorer, and I'm just going to type in demoweb01.contoso.com. And you'll see there's the default site that you get to. Now the slash blog directory is what we've added. Now, this web deployment package is the blogengine.net. It's available on CodePlex. And essentially, the first time it's loading, there's a lot of caching that it has to do. So we're waiting for that caching to happen right now. It's a pretty short wait, but there it is. And then my blog is up, and everything is ready. So the next thing I want to talk about... I'm going to talk about updating. And as I said before, these slides here are going to be available online. But the update process essentially is going to, it's going to select the tier based on your update preference order. And then it's going to select the VM in that tier based on the upgrade domain you define. If you've set your upgrade domain to something, some value greater than one, and you have more than one VM in your tier, then it's going to handle that accordingly. So it's going to remove the VM from the load balancer. It's going to do all the pre-uninstallation process that you've defined in the service template. It's going to uninstall the application and do all the pre-install. So I'll show, this will make more sense when I'm showing what it looks like to do an update. But essentially, it's going to remove the application that's there and add the new application, running the proper scripts in between. And then it's going to do the post-install script again. And then it's going to add it back to the load balancer, if it was in the load balancer, obviously. And then it's done. Now, this is what's called the in-place update process. This works for some kind of application like SQL frameworks and things like that, web deploy frameworks that'll work for. For some specific situations, and when if you have the state of the application being separated from the state of the operating system, and that would be something like server app v, one of those types of packages, then we have something called an image-based update process, and this is essentially going to do the same type of process, but if it's going to do something like add another disk or do whatever it needs to do there. It's going to go through and essentially go through a different process because server app v has its own process for maintaining the state of the machine. So if you give another server app v package, it's going to have to essentially remove the OS disk because it's based on an image. And that's just a sort of an idiosyncrasy of server app v. But once it removes it, it's essentially going to do the same type of thing. It's going to remove the server app v package, do any kind of installation you need to do, restore the new server app v package, and then go back. So you see, this is a case where you've got that kind of package and you've got some kind of state that's separated from your operating system. But if you're not using server app v or something like that, it would have gone through the previous slide instead to go through that process of updating. So now I'm going to show what the update process looks like. Oops. So now I'm gonna leave this open for a moment. Let's say, for instance, I don't like this theme. And I'm just going to make a change to this theme just to kind of show that I made a change to the web application. Whatever the change is, the change is not really important because the change itself is just going to depend on the application and how you're packaging your own applications. But essentially, what we're going to do here is your blog demo. If we look at our VMs and services, you'll see the My Blog here. This is the service we deployed earlier. And here you've got the My Blog application package that's been deployed. So what I'm going to do is come to the library, and like I did before with the copy, I'm going to do here. So I can't touch this blog demo, and I'll show you what that kind of looks like. If I open the designer, you'll see a warning here that says that this service configuration is read-only. That's because it's attached to the service instance. So it doesn't want me to make changes to this. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to change the release number here. And I'm going to save. And it's going to say, you know, this needs to create a new release, which I just said to do. So I'm going to say, okay. And if you look back over here, I've got another V2 of my blog demo. So here, what I'm going to do is do an update to this blog. Now you'll notice in my application configuration, from my library, I have this web application package. From my library, I chose my blog version 1.zip. So what I'm going to do is going to remove this, and I'm going to add another web application. And this is going to be called my blog v2.zip. And this is just another web deploy package I had in my library. I'm going to say OK. So that's changed. Everything's fine. I'm going to go ahead and save this. Now, if I were to do a deployment of this, it would actually deploy. So this is actually referring to the same website location. It's actually referring to the same directory, so the deployment would fail. But if it weren't, then I could deploy to the same IIS server, just another application. But it doesn't. If I were to just deploy it that way, it wouldn't have any effect on the existing application. So I'm going to come back to the VMs and services here. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to right-click the service and choose this Set Template option. And now here, it tells you the name of the service, the current service template that you're running on. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to replace the current template with another version of this template. And so when I browse, you see it gives me the version 1 and version 2 that I had. So I'm going to select version 2. And it picks up the settings that have changed. These are the same setting. It's just saying these are settings. And if you had VMs here and you had VMs that were running on server app V, you could choose which type of update you did. As I showed before in the slides, there were two types of updates. This is where you would specify that type of update. And what it's going to do now is run a diff on the template, on the two templates, and kind of figure out where there's a difference. And here, what it sees is that it needs to uninstall this application and install this other application. So I'm going to choose Next and Finish. And now it says pending servicing. So what I need to do now is apply the template. So when I apply the template, it shows me the same thing to just kind of verify that it's doing what I want it to do. When I click OK, it's then going to do all of the servicing that it had just done. Looks like I had some kind of error. Perhaps I forgot some step. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Let's see if I can just restart. Yeah. So this VMM server that I'm using, it's actually being shared by a lot of demos right now. So it's very possible that there was just kind of some flakiness in the network for a moment. So I restarted the job. It looks like it ran fine. So I'm going to come back to IIS. And I'm going to come back to Internet Explorer, rather. When I hit reload, essentially it's a new application. So that the thing I was talking about before about caching up all the information prior to running, this is happening again. This is the first time I'm logging into the site, so it's got to cache up the information again. But we'll see once it finishes loading that the new theme has been applied, even though it's all the same information. And that's the only changes that I made. And then I'm going to go ahead and close this. All right. All right. So that was updating services. The last thing I'm going to talk about is what's new in R2 for as it pertains to services, that is. And the features that we've added in R2, one of the things is VHDX disk image sharing. Now at 12 o'clock, Jose with the Windows Server team is actually going to be giving a full talk, deep dive into shared VHDX and how that works. But all I'm talking about here is how it pertains to services, and that is how we've exposed shared VHDX to being able to share among multiple VMs. And then additional script hooks. As you saw before, there was this idea of pre-install of an application, post-install of an application, this sort of thing. So there were four script hooks before, and there were pre-install of an application. It's pre-install and then application pre-install, application post-install, and post-uninstall. All of these are referenced in those earlier slides where basically each of those has a distinct step when the script would run. And it would run on all the VMs the same way. Well, what we've added now is this idea of taking one tier and separating it out into a first machine that will run and all of the other machines that will run. So you can attach scripts to the first VM that's going to come up in a tier and attach scripts that are only going to run on the other VMs coming up in the tier. So if you were using, say, shared VHDX and you wanted to have an in-guest cluster, it would be very easy for you to just attach all of the creation script logic to just the first VM in the tier. And then the subsequent VMs in the tier, they just have to join the cluster. So you can have a much simpler script there. So we've added those additional hooks. And we've added a couple intrinsic service settings. And these are settings that are built in, essentially. As I was showing you before, putting a word in between the at symbols creates a service setting. What we've done is we have a couple specific variables that I'll go through in a moment that are essentially are built in. So if you say at computer name at, then that won't be a service setting. That will be something that's passed into your script the same way a service setting is would, but it will actually just pass in the computer name. So at deployment time, all those information will be populated. And you can get things like all of the names of the computers in your tier and that sort of information. And I'll go through that in a moment. So shared VH disk usage in templates. So you essentially you add a new disk into a VM tier in a service, and then you select the option to share this disk among the tier. All of the tier are homogeneous VMs, so they'll all get this setting, and then they'll all the disk image, that VHDX, will only be copied to the host once, and then the VMs will just share that same image. So the question is it also exposed in the normal UI outside of services? It's not exposed if you were to just deploy a VM because from within VMM. And the reason is there's no guarantee that the VMs are able to share that. There's no tier kind of idea. But it is also exposed in Hyper-V. So if you go into Hyper-V and you look at your VMs that are on the same host, you can then select to have a disk that's shared among multiple VMs. So it is only exposed in the service template from VMM's point of view. So requirements for shared VHDX templates. The VHDX disk image has to be on a SCSI disk. The service template must be marked highly available. High availability of a service template means that it can only be deployed to a host cluster. So because all of the VMs in the tier may end up on different hosts, we want to make sure that all of the VMs have access to that same disk. And we do that because obviously clusters have shared storage. So then all of the hosts must be R2. And then the hosts themselves must be clustered. So I'll show what the shared VHDX looks like from within VMM. So I'll come back to the library here. And here I have a cluster demo. And some of you who've watched Vijay's talk might have seen this demo before. Essentially, what happens here is I've got one single tier. I've set it to have two images, two initial disks, or two initial VMs, I'm sorry. And then when I bring up the properties of this tier, what we'll see down in the hardware configuration section, you'll see the OS disk here. This is the plain OS disk. And when you expand here, you'll see two more disks. And these are disks that were in my library. And essentially, you'll just this little checkbox here, share this disk among the tier. And that's how it's exposed. So what's going to end up happening when you deploy this, and I'll bring up the deployed instance here. You go to VMs and services. You'll see you have two VMs within the same tier here. And you'll see here is where the SQL Server is running from within the roles. And I'll show you the scripts for that in a moment. And then when you go to disks, you'll see these cluster disks are the two disks that are shared among the tier. And Demo SQL 1 and Demo SQL 2 are the only VMs in the tier. All right, and then the next thing is the new scripts hooks. The new hooks that we've added are, as I said, the first VM creation and the other VM creation. We've also added other VMs deleted and last VMs deleted. And this is sort of, you can imagine, the converse operation of scaling in and scaling out. You would also want to remove the machine from the cluster prior to shutting the VM off. And if it's the last VM in the tier, maybe you want to just completely destroy the cluster. So those hooks are there for that. So your scripts for guest clustering become significantly simpler than they were before, if you did it before. And I'll show you what that looks like back in the... back in the same demo here, I'll bring up the library. In the cluster demo, we'll open it up in the designer. I think I already had the designer open, actually. And then we look at the properties here. Now, the application host profile, it's a general application host profile. So I can add scripts to it, although it is important to note that if you're adding scripts as a general application profile, you won't be able to run those scripts without a VM. These scripts can only run if they're attached to a VM. So you can't just create an application profile with generic scripts and deploy it to some machine in your environment. But here's when the first VMs are created. And you'll see what ends up happening here is I'm just running a command. And then here's my cluster script that's going to create the cluster, format all the disks, add the disks to the cluster, and that sort of thing. And I'm passing in the name of the cluster as a service setting. And then the next thing that happens, also on the first VM only, is the actual SQL install. So here I just have a script that runs the SQL installation, and it's essentially I ran through the SQL installation manually. It gave me the INI file for the SQL install that I configured, and I just used that. And then pass in a couple things like the username and the SQL password. And what this is going to do, this command script actually calls a PowerShell script that does the installation. And then the next thing is when the other VMs are created, you'll see it's referencing a different script because this script is just going to join the cluster. And then comparatively, the SQL install script on the other VMs are going to also just join the SQL instance. If you're familiar with failover cluster installs for SQL, that should make sense to you. Now, here, I haven't mentioned this before, the .cr package file. This is essentially what's going to contain your application. And I want to bring up what that looks like. So this is actually my library share here. You'll see here are my VHDX images, here are my blogs, and here I have a folder that ends in .cr. By ending this folder in .cr, I've indicated to the VMM library that this is a custom resource, which means by selecting that custom resource back in my service template, this here essentially is the relative path from within that custom resource. So when we go to the custom resource, we'll see I've got cluster. In that directory, I've got a first script and a rest script. The first script does very little. It actually just sets the execution policy and calls the other script, passing in all the same arguments. And then the first PowerShell script, the first thing it's going to do is initialize all the disks and create partitions on them. The next thing it's going to do is essentially going to enumerate the disks, give them drive letters and things like that, and it's going to add them to the cluster, and then the last thing it does is testing the cluster. Because SQL will block installation if you haven't run cluster validation. And then comparatively, the REST script, all it has to do is join the cluster. Fairly simple. I just have some error logic in here that says if there's some problem finding the cluster name, then fail. Because at that point, the assumption should be that the cluster is already up. And then if we look at the SQL installation is essentially the command line referencing this INI file, and then providing in the username and password here. And all of this, all of this sort of thing is well documented in TechNet for SQL.
Can you use a SQL application profile instead of...
So the caveat there is that the SQL application profile is only for completing a sysprep install of SQL. And SQL does not support doing a sysprep installation on a cluster. So this is why I had to run the installation manually. And then here you'll see here, this is essentially the INI file that just has all the installation information. And then there's also a similar INI file for the REST script, and it does the same thing, just referencing the other INI file. I'm sorry? So you could call the PowerShell script straight from here. The reason I use the command script as a sort of a jumping point is because when I'm doing the VM installations, sometimes I've seen problems with execution policy. And in this situation, I'm running as a domain admin, so you shouldn't see problems. But I just kind of use that to make sure that the execution policy is set to allow me to run that script. But you could very well put your PowerShell script directly there and then call it from there. You would just have to make sure that everything's kind of set up beforehand. So let's see. I believe that's all I had for those. And I'll jump back to... All right. And then the last thing I'm going to talk about is the intrinsic service settings. So these are specific service settings passed to the scripts. And these were kind of done because, so, you know, as you're setting up a guest cluster, you'll find that if you have your first versus rest scenario, it's very straightforward. It's very easy to do things that way. If you're really under a time crunch and you want these templates to really deploy quickly, you don't want the first VM to come up all the way before all the other VMs might come up. So you might want additional script logic. Say if you want to deploy all of your VMs in parallel, but then use script logic within the script to say, if I'm the second VM, you know, that sort of thing. So say if you're installing two SQL instances, you could bring both VMs up at the same time, install one SQL instance on one, install the other SQL instance on the other, and then install the other instances to join those on each of the other machines. And that sort of thing could really speed up your, you know, you could really crunch performance out of it to really deploy things quickly, but it would require more robust script logic. And for that sort of things, that's why we included these intrinsic service settings, so that the VMs themselves can be aware of the fact that they're within a service and then they're in their environment. So the new settings, you've got your service name, the name of your service, your service ID, that's the GUID for the service name in VMM, the tier name, so back to the other one, if I name my SQL tier 1, then I know my tier name here will be just a string that's SQL tier 1. Sort of pass all that in. The tier ID would be the GUID of the tier ID. And all of these could be useful if, for instance, you need to query the VMM server for something and you don't have to worry about getting all this information. You'll know which service you are and which service ID you are. So if you're querying the VMM server, you can just pull that service ID so you know things about yourself. The computer name, same deal there. The VM ID, that's the GUID of the VM that is currently running. And then the service VM computer names. And what this is going to be is a string where it's basically going to give you all of the tiers and all of the computers in the tier as one long string. And this would be extraordinarily useful, for instance, if you're bringing up a SQL tier and you're also bringing up a IIS tier, and your IIS tier needs to be configured to speak to your SQL tier, then you can get the name of the computers in the SQL tier from within your IIS server if you just pass in this service instance, if you just pass in this service setting. So that's about all I have. Here are some additional resources. These will end up online. You can go through these. If you've looked at the presentation prior to coming to this session, you'll notice that some of it changed a little bit at the last minute. So some of this information here, for instance, has changed. I'm going to go straight over there after this to update the online version. So if you wait just a few days, that should be updated. But here's some more resources for kind of going through servicing for information. Other related sessions, if you want to view those online. And I do urge you to fill out the surveys. I'm fairly new to presenting, so I welcome all feedback, however harsh it may be. And here's the VMM manager team, the virtual machine manager team, just kind of us all out in Redmond there underneath the cherry blossoms. There's a requisite other resources you have. And that's all I have. So thanks for coming out. Are there any questions at the moment that I want to... Actually can't see most of the audience with the spotlight. All right. Well, thanks again for everyone for coming out, and have a good rest of the day.